Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. If you're a business owner and you want to increase your cash flow, or if you're a label or artist and you want to promote new music, then listen up. For information about advertising on Everyone Loves Guitar, including information on geographically targeted ads, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. The Be Fulfilled Journal helps you be more honest with yourself and with others and be more open to handling things you've avoided dealing with for years. It's a 12-week online and journal program that helps you identify and eliminate things you do that are causing you stress and live in more gratitude and joy. It was actually developed by a long-term friend of mine who got sober in 2008, and he's put together a great deal just for my listeners. You get the 300-page hardcover journal and access to the 12-week video program online, plus free shipping, plus membership in a private Facebook support group with others going through the program, plus a 5-day mini course showing you how to let go of stuff that's draining your energy, plus a 30-day 100% money-back guarantee. To start your journey and get all the bonuses, go to befulfilledjournal.com/ELG. That's befulfilledjournal.com/ELG. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. And I actually have one of my, this is one of the things that I love about this, when I get to actually talk to one of my favorite players that I've followed for years and years and years. We're with the one and only Troy Van Leeuwen today, guitar player, obviously, from Queens of the Stone Age. Besides being a member of Queens of the Stone Age, he also played with Failure, who's Ken Andrews' band, which I want to thank Ken for hooking us up. And he played with A Perfect Circle as well. He also played with Queens' side projects, Desert Sessions, Mondo Generator, Eagles of Death Metal, Gutter Twins, and his own side projects include Enemy, Sweethead, Gone Is Gone, which we'll talk about today. That's a great band. And besides Troy, Gone Is Gone consists of Troy Sanders, who's a singer and bass player from Mastodon, Tony Hajar, the drummer for At the Drive-In, and Mike Zarin. Troy also toured with Iggy Pop and Mark Lonegan, two great vocalists, man, and writers. And you may not know this, but in addition to electric guitar, Troy also plays acoustic, percussion, bass, 12-string, slide, lap steel, synthesizers, and he sings background vocals on all the Queens of the Stone Age records. Man, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you coming, dude.
Wow, that was a lot. I forgot how much stuff I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for reminding me.
That's cool, man. A lot of people are like, wow. Yeah. When I read their bios.
Well, I have that problem where if I sit too long with the guitar, I need something else to kind of bring me to a different sort of frame of mind. You know, piano is a great thing to just pound on for a while to kind of invert chords but I always end up back guitar. So that's, if I have too much time on my hands, I'll start playing trumpet. You
know? Hey, well, thank goodness you always wind up playing the back of guitar, because that's what works for me. Yeah. Hey, first off, I want to congratulate you. Getting ready to have your first child in a few months. I just was curious what's going through your mind about that.
Well, it's funny because of course I'm excited, and I'm just having everyone's words go through my head that it's the most amazing thing, and you don't think too hard about what to expect, because you'll never know what's coming. So it's a lot of sort of feelings of like, I don't know what's going to happen. It's just going to happen. So let's just roll with it.
Yeah, man. Well, congratulations and good luck with everything, man. I'm sure everything's going to be great.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, of course, man. You started off playing drums. I was curious what prompted you to switch over to guitar.
Well, like every kid, I think I was probably just going into like junior high school. I mean, I wanted to play drums. I've always been into rock and roll. And drums are the easiest thing to sort of go, I just want to hit stuff, and all the cool kids in, you know, in school band played drums, you know, so that's kind of why I started playing drums in the first place. But, you know, after a few years of playing, I felt I was hitting a wall. You know, I couldn't get, you know, I couldn't do that double kick thing that John Bonham does in the first record. And that really was frustrating. Couldn't figure it out. Literally, I went up to visit some family up in Oregon, and my uncle had this acoustic guitar, and he taught me a song. I think it was Red River Rose, Johnny Cash. I'm having a blank, but it was definitely a Johnny Cash song. And I picked it right up, and literally, like, he gave me basically my cousin's guitar.
Very cool.
Because, wow, he actually picked it up. And so he gave me my cousin's guitar, and I took it home with me. And literally a week later, my mom was putting me in lessons. And it just seemed to click more. Like, within a month, I was, you know, learning how to play, you know, like Stairway to Heaven and stuff like that, you know.
Oh, wow.
Or at least attempting to play it. I think the first full song I learned was The Rover by Zeppelin.
Great,
like,
song.
The solo and everything.
Not a very common song to learn as a first song. Yeah.
I love that song. I love the melody in that song. And the solo was always something that I really dug. So it just clicked, you know? So, and the funny story about that is, I just had Christmas at my house, and that same uncle came, and he's like, wow. So I did this to you.
Who'd have thought? Yeah, I was thinking that in my head.
And so I gave that guitar back to him to give to my cousin, who now lives in Holland. So
that is really cool.
Be getting that guitar back, because it was trashed. It was trashed for years. It was a crappy, you know, like, little parlor acoustic guitar made in Korea that didn't even have a truss rod.
That's
so
great,
I was
man.
Able to refurbish it and give it back to him. So I thought that was apropos.
Yeah, that's really cool. I was thinking that. Did they ever think, you know, that you'd become you? That's a pretty good success story.
Yeah, it's cool.
I read somewhere that you did some session work on Korn's early records early in your career.
I didn't play on any of their records. No. In between like Failure and A Perfect Circle, I was kind of kicking around town. You know, this is right when Pro Tools is just kind of being people are just starting to use Pro Tools in the studio. And I lived next to this guy named Josh Abraham, who was a producer. And he basically dove in head first into the digital realm. And he started producing records. And so he asked me to kind of come in and help out, you know. So I learned, I took some time off from the road, and I just spent a bunch of time in the studio learning. You know, he taught me how to cut drums and how to edit and stuff like that. So I was kind of like a studio rat for a while. But I think that he was just doing a bunch of remixes for, like, you know, those bands at the time, like Korn and Limp Bizkit.
Okay.
And like Ice Cube and Depeche Mode. Anything that kind of came out in that kind of K-rock world, K-rock West Coast, you know, things that were being played on the radio, we would always get thrown a remix. So I did like three or four Korn remixes with him. And like, I think we did one for Ice Cube. And yeah, so so he was like, okay, you've done enough cutting drums and placing samples and stuff. Let's play some guitar on this. You know, come on, do what you do. So that's literally what, you know, what I was doing.
So you patched in some stuff.
Yeah. Basically it was like, you know, he knows my guitar playing, and he was like, dude, just get up and just play something, you know, let's just stop fucking around. So it was kind of an interesting time where I put the guitar down for a while. So until, you know, doing stuff like that, I was like, oh yeah, this is what I do. Yeah. Forgot.
That's cool. I hope this is the only question that I will ask you that you've been asked a thousand times, was how'd you get the initial audition for Queens?
Well, there's a lot of connections there, you know. In Failure, our sound guy, the guy that we got for the Fantastic Planet tour, is this guy named Hutch, who we wanted specifically because he was doing sound for Caius. And, you know, back when Caius was around, the low end was so gnarly that we were just like, we want that guy, you know. So he was our sound guy when Caius broke up. So we kind of borrowed him. And then after a few years, you know, Failure to Disband, I joined a Perfect Circle. I was listening to the Queens records, you know, from day one because of my connection to Hutch. Hutch was always like the extra member in the band that was, you know, when you have a great sound man, he's the other member of the band that presents you to the audience. So literally, so I was on a break from Perfect Circle after the first record and kind of, you know, another one of those moments where I'm just like, what am I doing? You know, I'm home like cutting samples again and you know, working in the studio. And I've known Josh since those days too. So Hutch basically, you know, shooed me in because they needed a guy. Right. And literally, Songs for Deaf wasn't even, I think it just got mixed or something. And so I was itching to get on the road, you know, and I was like, hell yeah, I get to join another one of my favorite bands. So it was a no brainer for me. So literally I just went to the rehearsal space and played what I knew already. And it was like, okay, let's just do this. Because I, you know, I'm one of those guys who will sit and listen to records and play along. That's how I learn mainly everything. So it wasn't too much of a stretch for me to learn, you know, a bunch of the songs that I kind of knew already.
I would imagine, I get you seem pretty easygoing, but I get the sense that you're like serious, like when it comes to work, you're like super intense. Is that?
I try to be focused.
Yeah.
You know, I do have, when it comes to something that I'm inspired by, I get lasered. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's something I even want to do even more. You know, I think discipline is my one thing that I just kind of, I should do this more, you know.
I read a book, seven, remember that book, not Seven Habits of Highly Successful. There was a book like that. Remember that title, Seven Habits of Highly Successful People? It was something
familiar, yeah.
Something like that, but for companies, and this guy profiled all these companies. His name was Tom Collins, and I can't think of the name of the book. It was popular. But anyway, the number one quality of the top most successful companies was discipline.
Yeah, I mean, it's because talent is one thing, you know. Lots of people have talent, you know, and focusing that and being, you know, being disciplined enough to carry things out and, or I guess seeing things through to their natural conclusion. To me, that's something I think is key to like success.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I agree with you 100%. So then I read, after you got the gig with them to support the Songs for the Deaf tour, you had to learn like 30 songs in a week.
Yeah, basically. Well, it wasn't just guitar too. It was keys and lap steel, which that was kind of my first foray. I've always played slide guitar. You know, that's fun for me too. But lap steel is a little different because first of all, it's in a different position. Second of all, it makes you play slide a little differently, you know, it brings something else out. But yeah, it was like guitar, keys, and lap steel for, I think it was almost 40 songs in a week.
Wow.
And I was still learning them within the first three gigs.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, I mean, I like challenges like that. I love that. for me, that makes me just jump right into the deep end. And it's like, I think that's where I kind of shine, I think.
Very cool, man. Want to ask you, you played with some, as I mentioned in the opening, you played two really great singers, writers, artists, and Iggy Pop and Mark Lanegan.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a big fan of both of those guys. I was curious about, and they're both like sort of similar, but not sort of similar. You know, they both like have this, they're, you know, Mark's pretty dark in his music, which I like, but he's a dark dude. And yeah, go ahead, man. Just talk freestyle.
No, I agree with you. All of us are inspired by Iggy, you know, and if I could speak for Mark on that behalf, he definitely is inspired by Iggy as well. But you know, they are like, Mark is a, like this voice that, it's funny. I'll use this example. Joshua says, if Mark sang about toothpaste, I'd want to start brushing. Pretty much the case. But he can sing anything and it could be three or four words and you'd be sold. It's that good.
Yeah.
I mean, playing with both of them, Iggy was the most gracious, most humbled, like most badass dude that you would ever want. When you ever want to meet your heroes, sometimes you're like, I hope it goes well. I mean, he exceeded every bit of why I think of him as a hero. And to play with him was beyond some wildest dreams of mine. But yeah, they both are inspiring to me, and Mark still makes these amazing records, and I wish I could work with him more, but he's got this thing right now where the way he creates, it's prolific and it's quick and it's simple. So it's like you almost have to catch him, you know?
Yeah.
He's badass. And playing with him was really a joy for me as well, because he allowed me to kind of be the band leader.
Oh, that's great.
So, because playing with him, you know, you got to take cues from him too. You know, I mean, if he's not ready to start, you don't start. You could play the intro for as long as you want. And he will give the most subtle, like, cue of like a barely a nod. And then I would have to announce, here we go. So that was a cool challenge for me too, to kind of like, you know, step into that role. I really dug it.
And did you get any takeaways from either of those guys? Like, either not lessons, but you know, something that you said, okay, this is interesting, and let me file it in the cabinet in my mind.
Well, I think of both of them as amazing lyricists, and I think what makes them so great, the thing that I take away from each of them, it's the same thing. Just say it, start it. Don't think about it. Especially when you're writing, you know, just put a placeholder there. Just get the ball rolling. And if it's not great at first, you will, you know, you'll hear it back and you'll go, ah, I hate that. I'm going to change that back or do this. So it'll at least get the ball rolling. But sometimes, you know, you get in your own way when it comes to writing, especially lyrics. That's the one thing I took away from each of them. Yeah.
When you are writing, is it how much of the blood comes in the editing versus the actual writing? Is most of it in the editing, I would imagine?
I would say when it comes to lyrics, yes. When it comes to music, I'm so ingrained in that pop structure, I'm always trying to get out of it. So that's something where I like to let myself go a little freer than like the verse chorus, you know, thing. It's kind of like learning something to forget it or, you know, I just think that when it comes to lyrics, having an economy to what the meaning is and how little it is actually your how little syllables and whatever works with the rhythm. To me, that's almost like more important than the words themselves. But of course, I want things to be said as simply as possible with as few words and as much poetry. So it's a really hard balance, I think. Lyrics to me are the most challenging thing. Hmm.
Yeah, word economy. So I understand what you're talking about. Yeah. Any cool or interesting Iggy stories?
Jesus, every day. I mean, you know, I'll say that the first time that we actually got in the room and played with him to get ready to do this tour was the day after Bowie died. And
oh,
it was that basically the day after he died, he learned on the plane, I guess. And he showed up and he sang, and it was probably the heaviest experience I've ever had, because he didn't say, guys, I can't make it today. He did what I think every great artist does and says, you know what? Tragedy happens, and things and you know, things that might make you shy away from doing what you do, that's actually might be the most important time to create, you know, when you're going through something like that.
Yeah.
I can't describe the feeling that it was. It was because all this outside of like the post-pop depression music, everything we played on that tour was from The Idiot and Lust for Life. And those are the two records that Bo is most known for working with Iggy, in my opinion, anyways. And so playing The Passenger and China Girl and I mean, it was just heavy.
Mm.
And I have the utmost of respect for Iggy to just say, no, let's roll, let's do this. And to me, I want to be like that when I grow up.
Thanks, man. That was good. Thank you for sharing that. I don't even know if you can answer this question, but because you've done a lot and a lot of really good stuff. Is there, if I ask for top three experiences musically for any reason, you know, could be you were in the zone, the hang, you know, the location, the 200,000 people, you know, whatever.
There's a few. I mean, yeah, I'm thinking of, I mean, that story I just told you was one of the biggest impacts on my musical life. You know, when I was in high school, I played in the marching band, and I still played snare drum, and I loved playing in marching band. I don't care what anyone says, it made me who I am as a rhythm player. You know, so the one experience that I had doing that was, we got invited, our school band got invited to play at the Dodger Stadium, like the opening for, I think, I'm not sure what game it was. I wasn't really following baseball at the time, but we got invited there to play along with 50 other high school bands. And we got invited to play all Henry Mancini songs, and he got to conduct all 50 of these bands.
That's really cool.
So all the drums were in one location right in front of him. So you're talking like it. I mean, it was like 100 drummers. I'm not joking.
Yeah.
It was that huge. That's probably the loudest, the biggest gig I've ever done.
As far as performers.
As far as performing.
Yeah.
So you're playing at Dodger Stadium, like Peter Gunn, and you're playing like Baby Elephant Walk, and just every Pink Panther, every cool Mancini song, he's conducting, and you're in the drum section. We didn't hear anybody else. We just heard drums, and it was like thunder. It was rad.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky because I've been able to play with a few of my heroes. You know, Elton John came to the studio for Like Clockwork, and that was an experience all within itself as well. You know, he thought he was just going to be the obligatory ballad on the record. And he wasn't. And he thought he was just going to throw down, you know, a piano part and a vocal and then bail. And we were like, no, dude, you're going to play with us. Because what we know, we knew he was a player. He plays every day. So we threw him into the deep end with us, and we made him play a guitar tuning song. You know, he's like, you fucking guitar players with your E and your fucking piano players with your E flat and B flat.
You fucking guitar players with your E and your B.
Your E and your A and your B. It's that, like,
that's but, great.
So we definitely, we challenged each other, you know, I mean, but he rolled in with like a, he rolled in with like a posse. He had security and he had a suit and these really great shoes on. I was like, yeah, this motherfucker knows what's up.
That's funny, man.
So, and then we just hit it off after that. You know, he started telling us stories about being friends with Mark Bolan and like going to see Iggy, you know, and he's just a music fan. I mean, he loves new music and he's still in it. You know, he's still with it. He's still hip enough to know something's good, and he's an old fucking rock and roller. He doesn't fuck around, and he'll tell you straight up that you're an asshole.
That's great.
You know? And I love that about him. You know, he called Madonna a fucking cunt. You know,
did he like, really?
I mean, and he's like, you know, he's like. I don't even know what the situation was, but he said something happened to Madonna, and someone was interviewing him. Something, I don't know, negative happened to her. Somebody was interviewing him, and he's like, oh, couldn't have happened to a worse cunt.
Holy shit. That's hilarious.
I was like, I can't fucking argue with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we had a blast with Elton. He was amazing.
That's really cool. What other heroes of yours have you played with?
Gosh, I mean, those are two big ones, Iggy and
Elton.
I'm blanking right now. Billy Gibbons was another one that, you know, it's funny, you know, you get to check off these things on your bucket lists, and I've been able to check off a few, you know, even though it's only for two gigs. Queens open up for Rolling Stones at the Forum, which is another venue that when you're a kid, you're like, I want to play here one day. So that was two for one.
And yeah.
Basically, Billy played on our record, Lullabies to Paralyze. And so he got up with us because he knows Keith. Of course he knows Keith.
Yeah.
So he got up and played with us on a song called Burn the Witch. And it was just, you're like, wow.
Billy Where Gibbons. Yeah.
So, yeah. And so there you go.
Yeah. That's cool, man. So you grew up in LA then?
I grew up in the suburbs of Long Beach. Yeah. Basically Lakewood, Artesia, Bellflower, that area. You know, not much goes on there. So I kind of got out when I was about 20, came to the city.
Came to LA?
Yeah, to Hollywood or whatever, yeah.
Right. I'm an East Coast guy. Sorry, man. I don't know anything
about it. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I'm assuming you know where that is.
No, I'm from...
Yeah. Yeah, it's basically, you know, so Long Beach, you know, is a port town, and, you know, that's where Snoop's from.
Right.
You know, there's lots of, like, I mean, basically... I lived in a rehearsal space in Bellflower, California, which borders on Compton. So it was
nice.
It was like right next
that to I've
like
heard of. That's
some serious, you know, gang violence. But I never got caught in any trouble. I just didn't want to be around it. I'd rather take my chances on the streets of Hollywood than you know. And over here next to Compton, you know, man. So it was gnarly.
Good move.
Yeah.
What was your childhood like growing up there in the Long Beach area?
I mean, you know, it's pretty like basic middle class upbringing, you know. Went to Christian schools and couldn't wait to get out, That's, you know, when it's funny when I look at like how things are today, you know, with kids. I mean, to me, like, kids are more encouraged to be creative nowadays, you know. I think that's great.
Yeah.
We were not encouraged to be creative.
Well, not going to Catholic school, like, man.
Yeah. You're encouraged to like fall in line.
To obey.
Like, job and obey and like do the right thing, you know. So it just didn't really jive with me. So, yeah, I couldn't wait to get out.
Good for you, man. How many, did you ever get your knuckles hit?
My knuckles, yeah, I got spanked and all that shit, yeah.
Doesn't that sound like, it's like in our lifetime, but isn't that like pretty fucking primitive when you think about
it? It's
that?
Totally primitive, yeah, but it's like,
like if,
you know, I don't condone any violence, but it happened to me.
Yeah.
I know. It's like, I'm being spanked for like, you know, throwing food.
It was absurd, man. It was absurd.
Yeah, it was absurd.
What kind of work did your folks do?
My mom worked basically as a nurse. She was in the ophthalmology department at Kaiser. She worked there for 45 years, you know. And my dad was basically, he ran an auto body shop, you know, where he worked on basically, you know, from the mid 70s to the, you know, well, the shop had been around since like the 40s, you know, my grandpa owned it and then he took it over.
Oh, cool.
So he was, you know, outside of working on everyone's car in the town, he was building hot rods and painting, you know, custom paint jobs and building, you know, our family ski boat was basically an old drag boat that he put a 350 Chevy in, two extra seats. Family, you know, we would get stopped by the cops on the water all the time for being too loud. And back then, you know, you could drink beer on the lake and
yeah,
those were our vacations, but it was pretty quiet, you know, yeah. There wasn't, and I didn't really get the chance to get out and see much music until I was out of the house, you know?
So none of them are really into music at all. You don't come from a musical family.
Well, that's not, I wouldn't say that. I would just say that they work their jobs. I mean, my dad turned me on to Chuck Berry and
okay.
And Jerry Lee Lewis when I was three, you know, I mean, he was into music and he played trumpet actually in the army band. Yes, he did.
Oh, very cool.
And sang in the church and stuff like that. So there was music there. But they didn't really see it as a, you know, a business.
Sure.
My dad had some musicality to him. He could hear stuff by ear. He could harmonize too. And I think, well, my grandma also played piano.
Okay.
On mom's side. So there's music always there. So that was the fortunate thing. It just was never encouraged to go beyond like, you know, singing it or playing in the church.
once they saw that, okay, he's serious about this, were they supportive or were they always like, you know,
there was a, what they would call support. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Enough of like, you know, I mean, yes, I did have to work to pay for things. But you know, my mom did help me out with some instruments and stuff like that.
Good.
Early on. Yeah, so there was enough support. I mean, I was going to do it no matter what.
Right.
So that's really what they figured out, I guess, early on. Yeah.
It's interesting. That is the number one quality that successful players have in common, is that they had support at home. Even if there was like dysfunction or, you know, somebody was, you know, maybe dad was an alcoholic or mom was an alcoholic. They had support, like 99 plus percent.
I think it's important. Yeah. I mean, I know I do I do know people that, you know, when you're making art and you're like, you're in the dark and you're like, what, how do I get through this? How do I do this? How do I make this happen? You know, nobody can support you through that. You got to do that yourself. But once you come out of that state of creating or coming out of the dark with something that you've created, you need the support from at least your friends to feel like you're doing something good.
Yeah.
You know? Otherwise you're just kind of alone.
And, yeah.
I think it's important.
Any low points, things that you had to go through that were just like horrible periods, music, business, personal, whatever you feel like talking about?
I mean, you know, it's funny. I've always played through all those things. There's, you know, I talked about my dad in the past tense because he passed away when I was on tour in Japan.
Man, I'm sorry about that.
Right when I joined the Queens. So that's all. It's fine, you know. I mean, I got to, you know, say goodbye to him. The thing was, you know, he basically didn't want me to stay home because I was doing, you know, I was touring. I was doing my thing, you know, and he was like, you know, if anything happens, I don't want you to stay home right now because something might happen, you know, basically is what he said. So,
wow.
And it did, but I mean, that was rough, but the one thing that got me through it was being able to play.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways I was running away a little bit, but at the same time I was playing through it and I was able to, you know, you really figure out who your friends are at that point too. And I was with the Queens and I made some deep connections at that time. So yeah, it was really important for me to not think about it in the way of like, well, this is dark and I'm going to go into the, you know, the abyss. To be out there, you know, playing in the world, it really helped me get through it.
And thank you for sharing that. And I'm real sorry for your loss, man. That was
heavy. All right, man. All good. You know,
that was
he's proud. So,
it's funny. You said something. I had a brain fart there. It was about something you said with respect to that, but no big deal. Is there anything that, like, Troy, if you'd go back, advice that you would have given yourself that would have made your life easier?
Yeah, you know, I just don't think anything would have made anything easier. There's got to be a profound struggle, you know, between, well, it can't be easy in my philosophy.
Not easy, but like easier. Like easier. If there's something, yeah, I agree. You can't achieve success easy. That's just like a biz op program that you buy, you know?
Yeah.
But something that, you know, if you heard this, it would have made either business, personal, something.
I think mostly most things that I kind of think back on it and I could have made better choices were definitely with business, you know, or kind of just fighting for, you know, what you deserve or what you think you deserve, you know. I'm a little bit, you know, being easygoing isn't always the best thing either. You know, I that's my default, you know, but I like to think that if I told myself when I was, you know, younger to make sure that you don't get taken advantage of. Also what I mentioned earlier is discipline, you know, that when I'm going through all these old like 4-track tapes and stuff like this, I was just making stuff, you know, and I would just make it and I would just let it be there. And I didn't do anything with it. So for me, I think following through is something I would tell myself to do more of, you know.
Follow through on projects.
Yeah.
And ideas. Yeah. That's, it's funny, man. There's certain things, Like as you get older, it becomes so crystal clear.
Yeah.
When you're younger, it's just not. It like.
Yeah, you're just kind of figuring it out, and you're just kind of going, I don't know. What do you think? You know. That's kind of. I mean, that's just. They don't call it wisdom for nothing. I mean, you gotta get wise as you get older.
Yeah. Man, let's talk about gear for a few minutes. I sure. cannot imagine. Like, do you have any idea how many guitars you have?
I don't. I just don't That's count. Awesome. I mean, I'm a bit of a and I don't really think that I get rid of stuff either. I'm discovering I have a lot of stuff.
All right.
Like I just moved about 6 months ago and I was like, damn, got a lot of stuff and it's not even all with me. It's, you know, a lot of stuff is, you know, at the Queen studio where we have a whole storage locker full of all of our gear, all of the stuff we've been collecting over the years. So there's a lot, but yeah, I've got it. I've got gear.
Ballpark, how many guitars do you think you have?
I mean, just in my house. I'm in my studio right now. I'll show you.
Yeah,
love this to is see just it. What I have like on display. So,
okay,
there's a rack of some acoustics, like a Hofner and one of my TVL Yamahas. There's a Tisco Del Rey right there, and an Aria bass. There's a Fender 12 string down there. Telly.
Yep.
There's an Echo Park.
Yep.
J series right there. Here's another rack with all my Gibsons and Epiphones.
Nice.
And here's another my rack God. With all my
Now we're getting those into the thick of it, man.
Those are just the things that I want on hand.
Right. And so you probably have like over like close to 50.
I would say around 45.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there like, give me your top three go-to favorites, not like like I need it in the studio, just the ones you truly enjoy picking up.
It's funny right now. I mean, I've got this Jazzmaster that, you know, is my signature that I end up just grabbing all the time. I use it on the road. I use it in the studio. It's still kind of in my, you know, my repertoire of things that I just grab. I have this 12 string Guild acoustic that I've been picking up a lot lately. And I've got a guitar that's being made right now that I'm really interested in getting. It's an Echo, Gabriel from Echo Park. I don't know if you know his stuff. But he makes a bunch of stuff for us.
Yeah, I know I know he makes a lot of stuff for you guys.
Yeah, and I mean, he's the real deal luthier who worked under Leo Fender at G&L. Mm. So he was his apprentice. So you know he knows this shit.
Yeah.
But the very first electric guitar I got was a Tisco Del Rey, and it was literally on its last legs. I mean, it probably was kept out in the rain or something, you know. But I bought it for like 40 or 50 bucks, and it was the first guitar that I learned all this stuff on, you know, all these songs and all, like every Zeppelin, every Sabbath, every Pretenders song, every song that I learned when I was first starting to play electric guitar, it was that guitar. But it took a shit. And back then, I'm talking like 82 or 83, I didn't think you can fix guitars. I mean, the pickups went out. I was like, well,
I need another one.
Yeah, I'm just like, I need a different guitar. But I kept it forever. And I had a couple guys work on it. And over the years, it sort of ended up getting kind of destroyed. You know, like I had this one dude routed more out of it and then put like Strat pickups in it. And I was like, I didn't know anything about what pickups to put in it or what vibrato to replace. So none of that information I was hip to. So I let him take a look at it. He's like, I really like this shape. Let me look at it, you know? So he kind of took the shape and modified it and stuff. And so it's being finished right now.
Oh, it is.
First guitar, he basically remade it for me, but made it like, you know, like a real badass instrument.
When is that coming?
I don't know.
That's cool.
He keeps sending photos. So, but it's like, you know, it's got a Bigsby on it instead of like the Tisco tremolo.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's got some phasing options on it too. So I'm curious to see if I know him, it's going to be insanely good. So I'm curious to get that guitar.
That's cool.
Yeah. But you know, another guitar that I always go to is I have an 85 Les Paul Deluxe that I've had forever. That's like my first really good guitar.
Is it handy? You have it there?
I do, yeah.
Can I see it? Nice. Dude, you are super organized. This is like the most organized musician.
Off the road for like...
studio I've ever seen.
So, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So it's like... oh, is that faded? It was white. Now it's TV yellow or...
oh, it's TV yellow.
It's beautiful, man. And wow.
Binding. And I, you know, again, you know, not knowing anything about guitars, the first time I was like, oh, you can replace the pickups. I had to replace the back pickup, but I couldn't find any mini humbuckers at the time. So I was like, I'll just put a real humbucker in there. So, of course, I did the routing on it, which was probably not the best thing. But I don't care. It's like,
yeah, man.
I'm not going to sell it.
No, that's beautiful guitar, man. So what is in there? Do you know what's even in there? It's just like a burst bucker or something?
This is the original mini humbucker. And this is just a replacement. Like, I think it's a Duncan JB or something, you know.
Okay.
Something that's kind of lower output, not too heavy. But, you know, the cool thing about this is like, this is lower output. So you can get a really great, just classic Les Paul tone here, and then you flip it to this, and it cleans up like magic.
Is that heavy? Like, is that? It's not chambered.
No, this is a lighter guitar.
That's great.
Yeah,
real nice looking guitar, man.
Those 70s customs that are 15 pounds.
Yeah,
I think that one's probably 11 pounds.
That's heavier than the chambered ones.
The thing is, I like heavy guitars. Yeah. There's certain guitars I don't really like playing, and most of them are neck heavy.
Like an SG?
I have an SG, and I love my SG. I have a 68. But yeah, playing it live is not something I'm into.
Oh,
I mean, it's a studio guitar. I don't. Yeah. That's the other thing. I've stopped taking my vintage guitars out on the road too.
Yeah. How can you, man?
Had them destroyed. That one's been beat up. That was my main guitar in failure, you know? So in the 90s, when you're in a van and you got one crew guy doing everything, you know, it's been destroyed basically, you know, but the finish is just gone, but it still sounds amazing. I just don't want anything bad to happen to it.
Oh, hell no, man.
Yeah.
What's like the best amp that you own or have owned or played through?
Well, the one amp that I've had that I just go to all the time, and it's a 65 Fender Bassman. It's the head. It's a Blackface head. For me, I could plug that into any cabinet and it always sounds good. As far as like more desirable heads, I've got two that are really, really great. But I don't take them on the road. It's a Marshall Jubilee, 2550.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got an Orange Mad Amp from 68.
Oh, that's wow.
Great for bass and guitar, but that's another studio piece that I just won't take on the road. It's too precious.
No way, man.
Yeah.
Ever sell a guitar that you wish you can get back?
Nope.
Yeah, you said you don't get rid of anything.
I've had the one guitar that got away. It was somewhere on tour in Nashville. Somebody broke into our van, stole my Rickenbacker 12-string. It was a Roger McGuinn reissue, but it was just like, it was rad.
Yeah.
The one that I'm bummed about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't sell them, as you can see.
Do you tend to keep, do you like a hoarder with stuff in general, or?
Do you tend to keep
stuff just in general, keep stuff around?
I mean, this is
or just guitars.
It's more guitars and amps and like lately it's been synths, you know. I've been getting into synths and I don't have a great, you know, like an amazing vintage synth collection, but I have some newer stuff that I really dig. So, but I keep stuff. I keep all my outboard gear. I think I've sold a couple of compressors.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll sell stuff that's easy to get if I need it.
Hmm.
But so far I have, you know, when you got like a DBX 160A, those are everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
I'd rather, you know, use something that's a little more character.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Desert Island Discs, man. Give me your top.
Wow. I mean, shit. That's fun. That's hard.
Oh, I know.
Really hard. I mean, I guess stuff that I couldn't like live without. Like it's always something that's on the road. I need to listen to certain things that put me in a, especially at an airport. The one record that I listen to at an airport or on a plane to calm me down is Music for Airports by Brian Eno.
That's so funny.
Yeah, there's not one guitar on that record, but it's the record that I'll put on that'll just, you know, it'll just lull me into a calm state if I'm, you know, airports are now these days, man.
Oh,
it's just a fuck fest.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's funny, music for airports at airports.
Yeah, it really works. You know, I really love listening to Chet Baker, right? I just continually go back to Chet Baker. Like, I think there's an essential collection of all the songs that he sings, all the standards he sings. I love the way he does standards that, you know, you can hear, like, you know, he's singing through a tooth that's missing. I mean, he was such a terrible junkie, but he was so buttery smooth with his voice and his trumpet playing. It always makes me feel good. And I mean, there's a lot. I mean, I love The Idiot by Iggy. That's still one of my favorite records ever.
Wow. What a, diversity here, man. Brian Eno, Chet Baker, and Iggy Pop. That might be the first time in the history of mankind those three have been mentioned together in the same sentence.
Well, I mean, they all have a purpose for me, and to me, that's the cool thing about records. You know, if I want to go back to my youth, I'll put on the first Zeppelin record. You know, that's where I started learning how to play music, to that record. That's where I made the switch too, from drums to guitar. I was like, I can't do this beat. I can't do the beat on Good Times, Bad Times. So I'm going to play the guitar instead.
Have you ever played with Jason Bonham?
No, I never have. Hmm. I don't think I've ever even met him.
That would be cool for you to do that, since it sounds like John was kind of a drumming hero of yours.
Definitely a drumming hero of mine and many other drummers I know. I know he was playing. He did the reunion.
Yeah, he did. It was great.
And I was on the road at the time and I didn't get to see him. But I didn't really get to play with John Paul Jones, 'cause you know, he did that he did that record with Dave Grohl and Josh called Them Crooked Vultures.
Yeah, yeah.
But Sweet Head opened up for Them Crooked Vultures in Europe, and that was a joy to hang out with John Paul Jones. He is just another super talented individual that is very humble and gracious, and another sort of hero that when you meet them, you're like, thank God he's not a dick.
Yeah. It's a bummer when you kind of get disappointed like that. What do they say? Be careful when you meet your heroes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've been fortunate.
Hey, what are maybe some of the most important things you've learned about yourself throughout your career experience and life in general? I feel like this is a good interview for you, like as you get ready to have a kid.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess the thing I learned about myself, I like being an easygoing guy, but I can catch myself in situations where that can be, uncomfortable if I let that be my personality all the time.
Yeah.
So I got to switch it into business mode. I got to figure out when that is. I'm still learning that. Because I like to play music with my friends, and I like to play music with people that I respect. And, sometimes, and it's not very often, but sometimes you run into folks along the way, in your career where you're like, wow, this is uncomfortable. What got me into doing what I'd like to do now is weird because of business. So I just have to, for me, learning how to figure that out is always interesting,
Well, yeah, I think a lot of people, I don't know if you're like this, but I think a lot of people that tend to be easygoing also like avoid confrontation. And then when you have to, it's an uncomfortable thing to get what you perceive as confrontational.
Sure. Yeah. 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 That makes sense.
Yeah.
But, I do think that, I keep saying this, I'm pretty fortunate because not only have I been able to, even join some of my favorite bands, Failure, when they asked me to play with them, I was listening to their records all the time, So I've been able to ride a few waves of personal successes, and, playing with Queens has been nothing but this amazing journey that's filled with excitement and danger and
I like that. Excitement and danger.
Yeah, well, I mean, our reputation can precede us, even though actually most of the band have kids. This is going to be my first. So if we're able to have kids and be in a rock and roll band and tour the world and take our families out, it's pretty much as badass as it gets.
No, it's wonderful,
so,
man.
So it's, I think the one thing I keep learning about myself is I guess I'm doing something right.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so, man.
I get the chance to think about that now that I'm off the road and really revel in it too.
That's good that you do that, man, to give yourself a pat on the back.
Well, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I'm just trying to recognize that.
Yeah, yeah.
I got some good shit happening, and I want to keep it happening.
But I think it's good to acknowledge that, not like from an ego standpoint, but like how you're doing it. Like, I might have made some mistakes, but like overall, I think I probably did okay.
Sure.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's important, man. Because I don't know about you. I tend to think nothing of beating myself up for something I fuck up.
And dude, I'm right there. Yeah. I will definitely blame myself first.
Mm-hmm.
If something goes sideways.
Rule breaker or rule follower?
I think that I believe that you've got to learn the rules to break them. So I'm a rule breaker, but you got to know what you're breaking before you buy it.
Tell me something about yourself people would be surprised to hear.
Well, so this is a guitar interview.
sort of.
Sort of. I mean, I'll just say it. I like to bake.
That's awesome. No, man. Everybody says.
I don't know if that's a surprise. I like to make dinner. You know. I like to make hot sauce. Yeah, I'm not a whiz in the kitchen. I'm not fast or anything. Like, I'm not going to win Top Chef anytime soon. But I like to cook. It's another creative outlet for me.
Number one hobby not in like a formal survey, but of the people I've asked this question to.
The one thing that I want to do more of is like I've got old cars that I need to kind of fix up. I mean, I've got a 67 Cadillac convertible that really needs to be painted, and I've been putting it off because I've been enjoying driving it so much, but I got to let it go to get, because it's not going to look cool anymore if the paint's all, you know, jacked up. That says something that came down through my dad too, is a love for old American cars. Yeah. So I want to do more of that too, but it's a interesting thing for me to get my hands dirty that way, because I'm always protecting my hands, and all I can remember, you know, him, and I got an older brother too, who does a lot of, he more got the car gene than I did.
Right. The car gene.
Yeah, I like that. He has it in spades. But all I can remember is being at the shop when I was a kid and hearing him curse every time he banged his hand on something, and there'd be blood and grease, and I'd be like, that can't be good.
Oh, your brother. Yeah.
Infected, Dad. yeah. So I can't like wrench on cars too hard. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Probably not a good plan B for a professional guitar player. Yeah.
Even though, you know, my parents were like, you got to have a backup plan. That would be the backup plan. But I'm not there. I'm not there yet.
No, I think you're good with backup plans at this point, man. I think.
Yeah.
I think you're okay.
Thing figured out.
Yeah, man. Happiest moment or time in your life?
Well, I think right now is good. You know, starting a family is a pretty big deal. I'm glad I'm home to do it.
Yeah, that is nice. That's so, how it worked out.
Yeah. So I gotta say, I'm pretty happy right now. Yeah.
Biggest business or personal win?
It's funny, you know, I don't think of those things. I mean, I try to live in the moment, you know, and
you actually seem really good with that, to be honest. I mean, for whatever the hell that's worth.
I'm always trying to win. I'm always trying to get the, you know, have things work out for me, and they just are right now. So I guess, yeah, it kind of goes with that last question. Yeah. Right now is a good time, and being able to, you know, going on the road for 18 months and supporting a record that you believe in and it doing really well, and like being able to play with your friends, those are all wins, you know. That's all. And then coming home and like being able to chill and appreciate it, that's a win.
Yeah.
You know? All, they're both personal and business, you know.
Very much, man. Hey, I'm gonna ask you two more questions, and I can't thank you enough for your time and being so cool with stuff. Toughest decision you've had to make, or most difficult thing you've had to do?
You know, what was really tough for me was deciding to Well, in the period of time it took me to decide to leave a Perfect Circle to be in Queens full time, that was a tough decision. Because it seemed like for most people it's a no-brainer, but I really feel this connection with Maynard and Billy still to this day. And they really were very, you know, good for my career. Being in Perfect Circle was a big, big, big step. And it's not lost on me. But it was, of course, you know, in retrospect, I made the right move. But at the time, it was a hard decision to make because both bands were doing so well, and I didn't want to let down my friends, and I just, you know, I had to make the decision for me, and you know, I just wanted to think about it, make sure I made the right decision, and it took a while, but you know, I'm here now because of this bad decision.
Yeah, good for you. Well, it sounds like you, although you say you might struggle with. When they come to those crossroads, it sounds like you're able to push through and do the thing, whatever needs to be done when it has to get done. Last question. What's the biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years? And how much of that change has been intentional and how much just a part of aging?
I guess I've been able to amplify my personality more than anything. The thing that I've learned about getting older is that I feel like my personality is adaptable and I'm able to work with people. And I think that that's something I want to kind of hang on to, you know. I don't really think about ego or any of that stuff. And most of the people that I work with nowadays are all on the same page with me. So I think I've got a good support system of creative people around me that help me be who I am. Even more. So that's, for me, that's important. I think that the same thing goes for the people I work with. They would say the same thing, you know, having people around you that encourage you to do what you do is incredibly helpful.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Hey man, I want to tell people what you have going on. Let's talk about Gone is Gone. But before you talk about that, I just want to tell people, if you have not listened to Gone is Gone, check the band out. They're great. Really great. That's Troy's other band. And I got to tell you, in listening to that, it was incredibly apparent to me. I mean, in spades, what an influence you are on Queens of the Stone Age. It was, you know, it was so... You could, in hearing you, I was able to hear what you can, in hearing you in Gone is Gone, I was really crystal clear to identify your contributions in Queens. So it was great. I loved every track on both those records.
I know. I appreciate that, man. I'm just doing what I do, and however it comes out, It really just depends on the players around me too, because I need to be inspired. And so hopefully they're different enough sounding.
No, they don't sound, that's what was great. That's why I was able to identify it. It wasn't like Queens of the Stone Age. It was just like, holy shit, this is his thing. And I could see your influence on Queens through that, you know, not just in the writing, but in the layering of the sound, in the meter of how the chords are, in the mixing, you know, it was, you could hear that, you know, it was great.
Cool. I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, again, I'm just doing what I do, and I'm glad that I have, you know, guys like Tony and Troy that are, you know, and Mike that are like, let's just, This is what it sounds like. This is what we're going with, you know. And I just feel that as long as, you know, I'm expressing myself, that stuff should get through at some point with whatever I do. So, yeah, cool.
Are you guys, you have something coming out this year, you think?
Well, we have lots of music that we're finishing up. So we're trying to put something out. but we gotta, you know, we gotta get everyone in the same room at some point. So
that's tough.
We don't all live in Los Angeles. So, but we're trying to get together soon to kind of finish some stuff up. Yeah. So stay tuned on that note.
Awesome, man. Hey, listen, thank you very much for everything. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for talking to me.
Okay, everybody, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this interview, please share it with a friend or on your social media channels. We appreciate your support with this. Thanks very much to Troy Van Loon for spending time with us. I appreciate it. And please check out Gone Is Gone and, of course, Queens of the Stone Age. Make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get on our newsletter list so you and I can connect. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.